Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And in a couple of days, Prashanti is going to witness the festival of Diwali, the first festival in this month of November, the first enlightening festival, as we ready ourselves to celebrate the birthday of our beloved Lord in this secret month. And what lovely lightning and enlightening memories this festival brings to us. My mind really goes back first to the Shirdi Avatar. And Swami then, as Shirdi Sai, lighted the whole of Shirdi, pouring not oil but water into the lamps. And what a unique, eye-opening and literally enlightening occasion it was for the residents of that holiest of holy towns, the land of Shirdi. And whenever I think of this scene in Shirdi, what comes instantaneously to mind is that beautiful, beautiful song, Deepavali. Deepavali manaye suhani, Deepavali manaye suhani, mere sai ke haathon mein jadoo ka pani.
मनाए सुहानी मेरे बाबा के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे साई के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली श्रद्धा का दीपक भक्ति की ज्योति श्रद्धा का दीपक भक्ति की ज्योति सत्य प्रेम की जलती निशानी सत्य प्रेम की जलती निशानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे साई के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली मेरे साई की अमृतवाणी मेरे साई की अमृतवाणी मैं तो भैर साई दीवानी मैं तो भैर साई दीवानी ओ द्वारिका मैया ये भेद पुरानी द्वारिका मैया ये भेद पुरानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे बाबा के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे साई के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली दीपावली दीपावली.
So that was Shirdi, and now when we come to the Satya Sai Avatar, once students joined Baba schools and colleges, slowly Deepavali too became a significant celebration in Prashantinilayam, and the Lord loved to play with his children just to give them joy. And we have so many lovely snaps of how Swami himself used to light firecrackers along with little children of the primary school. In fact, I cannot forget how Swami used to every year send loads of crackers to the hostel, and what fun we used to have. First with Swami and then among ourselves in the hostel. With Swami it was a major festival many a times, staged in the Hillview Stadium, and later, for many years, in front of his residence in the lawns, in front of the Purnachandra Auditorium. And Swami loved it when he saw his students enjoying that festival of light and sound. And there would always be so many crackers left over, which would come ultimately to the hostel, and then we would have our fun that night. And with Swami, it is always fun. It is living with Swami is indeed fun. Spirituality is fun, but with a lot of caution too. It is fun, but with a lot of understanding and awareness, and within decent boundaries. In fact, if these celebrations with Swami were full of light and sound, if these were lightening and brightening, the divine discourses that Swami gave on these occasions were simply enlightening. In fact, I remember one discourse Swami gave in 1998, and what profundity emerged from his lips that evening. Of course, at that time, I did not really understand much of what Bhagwan was saying, but today when I reflect on this, it keeps just opening up new and new doors of my heart to new and new rays of light, of divine light, of wisdom. In that divine discourse, Swami told a story. He said, "Do you know why Deepavali is celebrated? What is the legend behind this?" And then he went on to narrate this tale. There was a demon named Narakasura, and the capital of the kingdom he ruled was called Pragjyotishapuram. Now, what is the meaning of this name, Pragjyotishapuram? Swami said, Prag means before, Jyoti means light, and Sha means forgetting. And Puram, of course, means city. So what it literally means is that Pragjyotishapuram referred to the inhabitants of this city. And what sort of inhabitants? Inhabitants of the city who have forgotten the ancient and eternal Jyoti. Pragjyotishapuram means people who have forgotten about the light, about Jyoti. They have forgotten the eternal Jyoti principle. They have no clue of the Atma Jyoti. And Narakasura, the king of this land, the leader of such people, indeed had totally lost touch with his Atma Jyoti. He had forgotten the Atma. He was steeped in the body. He identified himself only with the body, and that is why he was leading a life of darkness, a life of ignorance. And this life of ignorance is what is called Naraka or hell, Swami said. And Narakasura is one who travels towards ignorance. A person who travels towards ignorance, he is a demon, he is Narakasura. And the one who journeys to wisdom is Nara. So Nara is human who travels towards light, not darkness. And then Swami continued with the story and said, "Do you know how Krishna killed Narakasura?" Swami said, "He did not do it himself. Narakasura was very strong physically and mentally. So what Krishna did is, he only subjected Narakasura to his own anger. That's all. He would just do something to provoke Narakasura, and once he came in a fit of rage, once this demon was enraged, Krishna would simply withdraw. And so he would get even more angry. And this anger again and again is what weakened Narakasura." And Swami went on to say, when one gets angry, one loses the energy obtained from food eaten in the last 3 months. So Krishna did not have to do anything. The anger of Narakasura ensured that he slowly lost his powers. And finally, it was not Krishna but Satyabhama, Krishna's consort, who killed Narakasura. And who is Satyabhama? She is representative of Prakriti, nature. So it is Narakasura's anger which made him weak, and finally nature eliminated him. Isn't that so amazing? Many times we think that God is punishing us or someone else is hurting us. But actually we suffer because we weaken ourselves through our own anger, our jealousy, our pride, our desires. And finally, we succumb. God does not do any harm. In fact, Swami once said, God doesn't even know what is hatred. It is just not there in his nature. God only loves. He only helps. In fact, once Narakasura was killed, it was Krishna who freed the 16,000 gopis whom Narakasura had imprisoned and whom he had tortured. And once these cowherd maidens were free, they said they do not want to go back to their homes. They said they want to dedicate their lives to their master, to their savior, to their Krishna. And Krishna promised them that he would always be with them and protect them. And so in jubilation they celebrated, they rejoiced with song and dance, with light and sound, and that is why we have Diwali. From one lamp lit another, from the second lit the third, and from the third the fourth, and that is how we have a series of lights brightening the whole ambience. And they were in glee, the Gopikas were in glee, they were in bliss. Why? Because they were with God. They had been liberated from Naraka, from hell, from body consciousness, and now they are removed from Pragjyotishapuram, the city where the light of God was forgotten, to the Atma Jyotipuram, the city of Atma Jyoti. They were now attached to the Atma, to Krishna. They were now in heaven. And Swami says the lamp in Deepavali signifies this Param Jyoti, this one flame, the first flame from which everything is lit, is Param Jyoti, the supreme divine effulgence, and the rest that are lit after this primordial flame are called Jivan Jyotis, individual flames. And Swami went on to add, people celebrate this day bursting firecrackers signifying victory of good over evil, but the underlying meaning of Bharatiya festivals, Indian festivals, have to be understood. On these days people have a sacred bath early in the morning, wear new clothes and keep their houses and surroundings clean. But Swami said, the Vedas say antar bahishcha tat sarvam vyapya narayana stitah. What it means is God is present within and without, and therefore there should be external as well as internal cleanliness. Just as water makes your body clean, what is essential to make our heart clean is love. Water is for the body, but for the heart it is love what is important. And Swami said, it is love that we should cultivate and share. As one Swami told Dr. Reddy, Penchko and Panchko, foster love and disseminate love. And this is what we should be doing this Diwali. And really, this reminds me of that lovely song.
Jyot se jyot jalate chalo, jyot se jyot jalate ते चलो प्रेम की गंगा बहाते चलो प्रेम की गंगा बहाते चलो.
Thank you.
Isn't that a beautiful song? I feel like listening to it again and again, because what profound meaning, what lovely sentiments expressed in the song. Prem ki ganga bahate chalo, jyot se jyot chalate chalo. And to spread love, to light the lamp of love, to disseminate happiness, we need to be happy first. We have to be first calm and contented. We should be brimming with happiness and joy first. And that can happen only when we make our heart pure. Many times we complain in our lives. Why this happens to me? Why only to me? Why now? Why in this manner? What wrong have I done? Why all this karma for me? How can I escape this? You say develop purity. How can I develop purity? How can I be oblivious to all that is happening around me and develop purity? How can I love the way Swami wants? Yes, these questions do come. But the real happiness is only when we spread love. We have to learn how to purify ourselves. We have to learn how to answer these questions that keep coming up ourselves. We have to learn how to become calm. And this is something that we're going to do today. We're going to discuss in this next part of this program today, in this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, some of these questions. I'm going to play for you the second episode of Radio Sai Study Circle, where we are discussing about these queries. We are discussing about the mystery of the law of karma and how to overcome this and how to emerge triumphant. And before I go on, let us first pause, offer our reverential pranams to Swami and pray that He bolsters our faculties to be the devotees that He wants us to be always equanimous, to be always full of love. So in this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, you're now going to listen to the second part of our study circle on the theme Reaction, Reflection, Resound. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and in this discussion, along with me, there are three other brothers from the university, Amey Deshpande, Sai Giridhar and Ganesh. And the session is being moderated by the controller of examinations, Mr. G.S. Srirangarajan. We had the first part of this study circle played last Thursday, where we introduced the law of karma and dwelt on some of the workings But in this episode, we move on to explain more in detail the law of karma and how it operates, and then how we can overcome and rise above the effects of our karma. I just hope that this for you will be an enlightening session as we prepare to celebrate Diwali. Let us learn to light our own lives with the lamp of wisdom, with the lamp of love. So over now to the moderator, Mr. G.S. Sri Rangarajan.
So I think now we need to go a little more deeper. We have to take that, bold step to go a little more deeper and try and see what has Swami said about the modus operandi of law of karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few examples and illustrations to actually understand how does it really happen. Do you recall discourses of Bhagwan where he has talked about the actual modus operandi?
Swami actually tells that there are three types of karmas, or the manifestation of karma is in three ways. One is what is called as Sanchita karma. Sanchita karma is that karma which is accumulated over many, many births. That is all over. Imagine, Swami says every thought also generates karma. So every thought, word and deed that has accumulated over like lifetimes together forms the Sanchita karma for us. And
it's something like a bank balance, a cosmic balance of every thought which is being deposited into this.
Yeah, that is why Swami says,
our Akashic record.
Always be careful and watch. Swami has said, watch your words, watch your actions.
So nothing goes unnoticed or unaccounted for.
Yeah. Sanchit is actually a Hindi word which means
Sanchit means accumulated or collected karma. So Sanchita karma is basically a carryover of all the karmas from the previous births into this birth. The second karma that we carry with us is the Prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma is that aspect of karma which is manifesting right now for me. The current situation in which I am, the life that I am facing right now, that is what is called as the Prarabdha karma. Now we all have discussed at length that, what we face is destiny and how we face it is self-effort. Now depending on how we either react or respond to this current situation, the Prarabdha karma, Agami karma is created. Agami karma is the karma which is yet to come. That is, I am manufacturing that karma right now. In fact, there is a beautiful Upanishadic description of this. We are compared to an archer, and it is said that the arrows that we have already left, those are the Prarabdha karmas, and the arrows that are there in our quiver, that is the Sanchita karma, and the Agami karmas are those arrows which are there in the workshop. They are still being manufactured by us.
That's frightening.
Yeah, so this is basically how the karmas that we accumulate.
Well,
and
it need not always be frightening also.
Because it looks like a continuous cycle, like there is no, how do we get out of this?
Well, if you do good, you will get good.
I think little later in the discussion, we will definitely try to find answers to this. Is it a frightening, vicious circle? Or, can we even overcome this?
In fact, Swami illustrates this with a nice example, He gives a story of two farmers. And one farmer is growing rice. It's a very good season and very good rains. So he's able to grow rice. And the other farmer, incidentally, grows ragi. Ragi is a local crop. And then it goes very well, good waters, good climate. And then they harvest the crop. So this farmer has got a lot of rice in his backyard. And this farmer has a lot of ragi. Then the second cycle, it so happens, there's this swap. The first farmer grows ragi, the second farmer wants to grow rice, but unfortunately there is huge drought, no water, season is unfavorable, climate is unfavorable, and the crop fails. And the second farmer is struggling, without proper food to eat, and he doesn't have rice. And he finds the first farmer relishing rice when they go to their house. And so Swami says it's so funny. I mean, it's an open secret. He grew rice before. He's enjoying the rice of the harvest which has already been done. Whereas this farmer had not done it. So now he feels jealous. He feels sad. How can that farmer enjoy? So it's a very simple logic. Though the illustration may sound simple, at a macro level, this is what happens in the world. Good people may be going through bitter consequences because of actions they have done much before. Same way, the bad people, so-called bad people, may be going through good situations and experiences,
yes,
because of the good they've done. So if you really look at it that way, everything is perfectly fine.
So basically, situations come to us because of what we have done. and never, never because of anyone else.
Just, we should never point a finger at anybody. That's what it means.
Yes. And I think it is very important to get out of that victim syndrome. And that will really, you know, make us a real choice maker in our lives. And I think choice making is such an empowering part of life. And law of karma gives us that blessing. You know, it makes us master of our life. If you look at it that way, instead of, you know, we being a slave of our circumstances, we can become a master of our life thanks to law of karma. And the other thing also that comes to my mind, I read this in that book, Many Mansions, written by Edgar Cayce. That is a book where he talks about so many people who have had this opportunity to know about their past births. And he makes an analysis of this past life regression cases. And he says that whatever situations we face in our life, it is only for us to get over certain tendencies that we have carried from many births. For example, if you have a tendency to get angry, situations in our life will keep coming to see whether we have overcome that trait.
I fully agree with that. You know, normally that's what happens. Or you have all these irritants coming to you and...
Yeah, and you know, they keep coming to you again and again. And he says that they will keep coming to you until you get over it. And in fact, in some ways, it is a very, very tough taskmaster. Life is such a tough taskmaster in the sense that he says, if you fail in one particular trait, if you are, for example, not able to get over anger in this life, in your next life, one more gets added on. Yeah.
So that test becomes
the
tougher
test becomes
and tougher.
Severe. Yeah. It's not that you cannot get over. You can get over, but it becomes difficult.
Most of us get into the tendency of putting the cart in front of the bull. What we do is we fight with the external challenges and irritation, whatever is irritating us.
No, we keep pointing a finger at everybody else.
But we forget that we have to actually work within.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, a positive outlook is the whole concept of karma is somehow looks like it's placed for our growth and spiritual development. Because unless we learn from our mistakes and overcome those mistakes that we make, there is no way that we are going to progress ahead.
And reach our goal.
And reach our goal. So karma ensures that, you know, the situation comes back to you so that you learn from the situation. And I had a very nice experience. You know, we had gone together on a small trip. And in that, I was to meet a few people. And unfortunately, you know, it happens that some people had given me their impressions about that particular person, you know, based on their own experiences and all that. So when I met that person, the experience was based on my views and perceptions, which was fed by so many other people. So I was not looking at the person with a fresh perspective, but with all that clouded
baggage,
perspective, yeah. Baggage of preconceived, conditioned mind. And I was seeing that the world was simply reflecting back my own feelings. That person was coming and behaving exactly the way others told me that that person behaves. So somehow I felt that that is not the way ahead and wanted to break that pattern. Just took a decision on the spot that let me experiment and try this out. Let me be positive whatever happens. Let me feel that that person is a very beautiful, wonderful person. Why should I judge that person at all? You know, and I just broke that pattern and started practicing, you know, this thing that, you know, this person is a wonderful person. And believe it or not, in the next few days, our whole interaction changed. That person was so amicable, so loving.
Wonderful.
In fact, at the end of the trip, we turned out to be good friends.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe, Giridhar, this is the reason why God does not allow us to recall all our past, because it would condition our mind. And then you would not get an opportunity to respond, as Ganesh said, in a positive way, because you'll always react.
Very true.
So it's a clean slate approach is very essential in the law of karma.
From what Bishop Brother was saying about the victim consciousness, one more angle to karma theory is, there's a concept which I read long back. It talks about archetypes. Now, what are archetypes? We all know that when we are trying to tune on to our particular frequency in a radio, we keep changing the channel. So whichever channel we tune on to, we receive that particular telecast. So similarly, whatever karma we are doing repeatedly, it goes and resonates to a particular archetype. Archetype is basically a type of energy field which exists in the universe. It can be, suppose you are doing a Gayatri mantra. We know millions of people do Gayatri mantra. So that particular energy field is very, very, very strong. So if you are, the moment you tune to Gayatri mantra, you are sending the signal to that particular energy field and it bounces back. Now since it is a very strong energy field, you also get recharged. At the same time, suppose you have this habit of losing your temper, you become angry. So what you're doing, you're tuning yourself into that particular archetype. So whichever emotion, whichever action you are tuning into, you are more likely to go into that particular state of mind, or you may be put into that particular situation again and again.
So it gets reinforced.
It gets reinforced. So here, one thing that we have to understand is, we have to, some people say, I'm tired because I lose my temper very easily. And I don't know why I again and again bump into people or a situation which irritates me. So they are not realizing that they are the reason, the thought, the emotions are being generated from them. And slowly that archetype starts, you know, controlling them. Here is where he has to exercise his choice as a human being.
Yes.
To consciously select the type of action, the type of environment, yes, to tune into the positive archetypes, yes, and slowly starve the negative archetypes and be free of
that
it.
That is discrimination.
That's where we have to use our discrimination.
Else I think it will snowball, isn't it? Because I've heard that for a negative energy or a negative karma, bad actions done, the effect is sometimes 7 times to 10 times.
10 times.
Comes back with that.
Correct. Yeah, with that cumulative kind of force. It's almost like a snowball effect.
Correct.
You know,
correct,
with respect to negative karmas.
And I've heard some people say that either you learn the lesson now, or each time it's going to become so stronger and more intense that finally you're forced to learn. So life starts with the option to learn and ends, yes, with the, you know, being forced to learn.
In fact, but, you know, one very big assumption in most of this, whenever we say, you know, that good things happen to bad people or bad things, is, you know, in that birth, he must have done this, in this birth. Probably there is a very large number of people who feel a little defeated. What is this rebirth concept? I mean, I don't even know whether this is my first birth, my 15th birth or my 1500th birth. I mean, and how can I do, what can I do about it? And I think even for people who don't really believe in rebirth, you know, or reincarnation, I think the law still remains, you know. And there was one concept which we heard by this famous author called Rhonda Byrne in her book, The Secret, is that if there is one fundamental principle that governs this entire universe, it is the law of attraction. You're all the time attracting into your life, exactly as Ganesh was telling us. Now, you know, what you predominantly feel. And I think that's the key here. When Bhagavan says, yet bhavam tad bhavati. It is what you feel that you are going to get. Not yet vicharam tad bhavati. Not what you think.
But more what you
feel. What you feel, yeah. So if you can fundamentally change that archetype, you know, my feeling itself. See, it's not the thoughts, because oftentimes, and I think the funny part, the irony is, we often think about what we don't want. You know, we are feeling about what we don't want rather than what we want. So that is why, you know, when often they used to say, when Mother Teresa was asked, you know, why don't you join us in this anti-war rally? She used to often say, I'll not join the anti-war rally. If there's a peace rally, I will join. Because there's a lot, fantastic, of difference between anti-war and peace. The predominant feeling in anti-war is still war.
Right.
But the feeling in peace,
the negation
is
of war need not be peace.
Exactly. Exactly.
In fact, when we do this affirmation, it is said, don't say I am not bad, say I am good. The subconscious mind doesn't register the word not.
And I think that is why Swami used to keep telling us, I am God, I am God, I am God. Reinforce that.
But in fact, the connection between the thought and the feeling, like we all know that, yes, yet bhavam, the feeling that we entertain is really what manifests. But the connection between the thought and the feeling is, if a particular kind of thought remains in the mind long enough, it translates or becomes a feeling in us. You know, Swami says pretend, tend and end. So that is even in Namasmarana and other practices which Swami has given us, this holds good, that you entertain good thoughts long enough, it becomes a feeling and it begins to manifest.
Very true. Very true. And also, Amay, as you said, it's not necessary that all the actions find the reactions only over births. These are only some of those very major, very dominantly significant, yes, actions that we do, possibly may have to take years to again, yes, get the reaction. But for most of the things, have you not seen people who have done bad and have also, yes, received the punishment for it, or people who have been very good and have also, yes, got the good from it?
In fact, sir, I remember, I think it was you in one of our awareness classes mentioning that people say that, you know, so many good things are happening to bad people. But do you know that good is only the superficial good, and in fact every night for them is, they are not able to live with all that.
True, many times, yes, it's only what we perceive, but we really do not know. Yes. You know, we may say, oh, they are so happy, but we need to just go into their life to see how happy they are.
In fact, correct,
having done maybe
in Hindi,
negative things.
Like, there is a joke, if tumhare paas ek sona hai, toh dusra sona nahi hoga. Means if you have one gold, sona means also
sleep.
Gold and sleep.
Sleep.
So if you have too much of gold, you won't have sleep.
In fact, there is that beautiful example from the Mahabharata. Youngsters would say that Duryodhana was all the time lived in the royal palace, even though he did all this evil. And you have Pandavas who had to live in the forest and undergo so many hardships, even though they were doing good. But the truth of the matter is, the Pandavas always slept peacefully because they always knew that Krishna was there at their side. Nothing's ever going to affect. But Duryodhana was in the palace, but I don't know if he really slept even one night.
Correct. Peacefully. Like Kamsa, Ravana, we've heard that.
Yeah.
I think here the important thing is, it is going to happen.
I think that Swami has categorically said, no escape from reaction.
From reaction, you know. And in fact, I'm tempted to ask Giridhar to narrate that, you know, wonderful example, the story which Swami gives.
Of Garuda?
Of Garuda, yes.
Actually, this beautiful story which Swami narrates. One day in Vaikuntha, Lord Yama, the Lord of Death, approaches Mahavishnu to consult with him on some matter. And as we all know, Garuda, or the celestial eagle, as some people call it, is the vahana or the vehicle of Lord Vishnu. So Garuda was waiting outside in Vaikuntham, and Lord Yama was walking by. And Lord Yama looked at a particular tree at a distance, and he saw a small bird there. He just stared at it intensely, and then walked inside to meet Mahavishnu. Garuda, who was very sharp in his intelligence, immediately recognized that the end of that bird is near. So he decided, you know, some kind of a compassion overwhelmed him, and he felt that he has to save that bird from its time, from its death. So he immediately carried that bird and rushed. You know, Garuda is said to be the fastest bird in the world. In fact, the Puranas describe him faster than light. You know, so with that kind of a speed, he carries this little bird to the Dandakaranya forest and, you know, leaves it there and comes back before Yama could consult Vishnu and come back. As Lord Yama walks out, he again looks at the branch which he looked at when he came into Vaikuntha, and he sees that the bird is missing, and he laughs within himself and walks away. Garuda is now puzzled because he knew for sure that Yama had come to, you know, fulfill the destiny of that bird. But why is he laughing now? So he rushed to his master, that is Lord Vishnu, and asks him what exactly happened. And Mahavishnu explains to him and says that Yama had a predicament. The predicament was that the destiny of this little bird was to die within few moments in the Dandakaranya forest, which was to experience a forest fire.
Oh my God.
Right? So Lord Yama was wondering, how do I transport this bird all the way from here to the Dandakaranya forest in few moments? That was his predicament, for which he approached Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu said, you don't worry, you go, it is already taken care.
You know? That's very nice.
Very nice.
Though Garuda felt bad that
he was, I think it brings about the fact that what is going to happen at what time is the best thing that can happen, and it must happen
and
at that time.
It's flawless.
It's inevitable.
It's flawless. I also remember another experience which is narrated by Phyllis Crystal in her book The Ultimate Experience, where she talks of, you know, those evenings when she would sit in the mandir and she would observe a woman carrying a baby in her arms which was blind. And the mother was so desperate that she would every day cry out and plead with Bhagwan to bless the child. And Swami would not even look towards her. Many of us would have observed this, and, you know, we feel within ourselves, Swami, don't you feel for them? You know, as though our feeling
compassion is
even greater than God. We know that He is Bhagwan and the very embodiment of compassion. Then Phyllis Crystal says that Bhagwan gives her an experience wherein she actually gets a vision, and where she is shown the entire journey of this particular child. In the previous birth, he was a boy who had a tendency of hurting others. And in one of the fight, actually what he does, he takes a pointed object and he pierces into the eyes of his friend and makes his friend blind. And then, you know, she sees all these scenes, and finally it's like Swami asking her the question that, now tell me, do you think what this child is going through is right or wrong? Because again, coming back to law of karma, the only way for that mind, because as Swami says, it's not the body which makes a mistake. It is the mind which makes the body commit a mistake. And that's why Bhagwan says, normally we punish a body, but what Bhagwan always has been doing is he always punishes the mind when a mistake is made. So the only way for the mind of that particular individual to know the pain that it had caused to the other person by blinding him is to go through the same experience. And that's why Bhagwan explains to Phyllis Crystal that this baby is born blind. So the best thing to do is to leave it that way, because then that action reaction gets balanced and a new journey will begin. But if Bhagwan were to intervene, the individual would never have known the pain it had caused, and possibly the mind would have again committed a mistake.
Repeated the same thing.
So looking at it this way, it looks very just. But again, the question may come, does this child know the past, that it is because of that now the boy is blind? But as even Giridhar mentioned, a clean slate approach is always better, because otherwise the mind gets so conditioned by our past vasanas and our habitual ways of reacting to things that possibly would never have reacted in a new way. And as even Bishu said, life is all about situation, circumstances where we need to learn. And for that, many a time a clean slate approach is good, wherein your mind will think of responding in a more mature way.
Sir, in fact, in this context of birth, rebirth, one devotee had the audacity to ask Swami, Swami, if you don't mind, I want to make one point, is that karma theory, there's a small flaw in the karma theory. If I do some mistake in my previous birth, and if I remember that I have done it in this birth, there's a higher chance that I may not do it.
That's a very smart way of putting it.
So,
should I not remember that?
So why should I not remember that? If I remember it, then I will definitely not do it. And Swami, in his own inimitable style, what he did, one small 2-year-old kid was sitting in the darshan. Swami calls that boy. And Swami tells him, if this boy remembers everything that he has done in his previous birth, do you think his face will be like this? See, it's one of the most beautiful thing in this creation is a child's face. No, the innocence. Then Swami says, even a child has a conscience. Conscience is there, it's awakened. And even a small child, when it is doing wrong, it knows that it is doing wrong. That inner conscience, in fact, they say when the child is small, the God is more prominent. You can see more
the voice
God
of
in the
conscience
is more strong. So that is not the way, that's a typical way of human thinking. And in this same...
And truly, Ganesh, it's the conscious mind which forgets, but the unconscious mind has those memories in it stored. That is why even when Janaka insisted with his guru that he would like to remember his past, the guru cautions him so many times, don't ask that question, it's not good for you.
It's not good for you.
But in the final master plan, we know finally he forces his guru to reveal the past, and then he discovers that the lady who was his wife in this birth was incidentally his mother in another birth. A simple truth like that can shatter your entire concept of what you may call as good or bad. And then, of course, in his case, it led him to become a totally detached soul and he moved in a positive way. But that is one reason why many a times it's better that certain aspects of past are hidden from a conscious memory.
Yes. In fact, once Gandhari was accusing Krishna, it was after Mahabharata, she was furious that all her 100 sons, they were dead. And she was complaining to Krishna, Kunti had only 5 sons. All of them are alive. And all the 100 sons have died. And what kind of justice do you proclaim? What is this? This is unjust. And that's when Krishna reminds her that when she was a small girl, she had this habit of going and breaking the eggs of the crocodile. And Krishna tells her that you had broken 100 eggs of a crocodile. And that pain of the mother, that crocodile mother which she went, you also had to experience. And see, just like the small, though she was small, but she knew what is good, what is bad. She was not small infant.
Age is with respect to the body, not with respect to the mind.
So then Krishna says that is the reason that why you have to lose 100 sons of yours.
I think the other important point over there is to learn from that, and to learn quickly and be able to bounce back, isn't it? I think that's the more important
point. So Gandhari should not have blamed anybody. She should have actually blamed her own action in the past.
Correct. And in fact, this is one point, this blaming thing, it happens so often, right? We meet with some person or some particular circumstance, and rather than learning quickly from it, we keep blaming that person. Mrs. Joy Thomas, in her book, Life is a Challenge, Meet It, she very beautifully brings out this concept of the message important, the messenger not important. Mm-hmm. She says that oftentimes we will find that there'll be one irritant, there'll be one irritable character who will keep coming and irritating or annoying you. The faster you learn, the better. Because that person will keep coming back and doing that. And eventually a point will come when you will get the message, that, hey, this is what is, it is not the person who's irritating, but this is some kind of my own inhibition or deficiency, which is making me get irritated about a particular thing. And she says the beauty it lies that the moment you learn it, the messenger ceases to exist. That is, you think that, this is what Swami wanted me to learn. come. Next time when he comes and he does like this, I will not react. Guess what? That person comes probably and he does not act like that. And you are wondering, aray, but I have already learned the... Yes, you have learned the lesson.
You've already
that person,
passed.
Yeah.
So this happens even with situations, circumstances, yeah. Individuals. And in fact, that's why Bhagwan always tells us that whatever happens is for our good.
Yeah,
because this
absolutely.
Fits in so well.
And one more thing which Swami emphasizes again is, sadhana is 70% vichara, introspective. Only if you have an introspective life,
you think, like, thinking, ask yourself.
Then only we'll be able to actually recognize or we learn the lesson. Otherwise, if you are going mechanically every day, we'll keep, you know, it's like bouncing again and again without learning.
I think it's vichara plus prayer to Bhagwan.
Prayer to Bhagwan.
And one thought that keeps coming, you know, in this discussion, even as you discuss about what we are is what we have done in the past. But, you know, always that question comes that what can I do now? What can I do now? How to get over? Now, how to earn that grace of God? And one thing that comes to me, which Bhagwan mentioned very forcefully in his discourses, especially whenever he spoke to students, be it in the hostel or be it in the college, he always said, revere your parents. Consider your mother as your first god. In fact, in today's science fair, Swami says, consider it your foremost duty to revere your mother as your divine and serve her. And Swami says, the mother's blessing is so powerful, that blessing can take you to really very great heights. And he gives so many examples. Swami told, if Gandhiji became what a Mahatma, it was only because of Putlibai. If Shivaji became that great Chhatrapati Shivaji, legendary figure, it was only because of Jijabai. And I mean, there are any number of instances where Bhagwan has mentioned
Abraham Lincoln's mother.
Abraham Lincoln's mother, yes. So I think Swami has given us such simple things, rules of life, that if we can follow diligently, it will help us to accumulate that good karma, which will help us to get on with life, make life a much more pleasant
Bhagwan
experience.
Bhagwan himself, if you see, Mother Ishwarama.
Exactly. Yeah, Swami always lauded Mother Ishwarama.
And this is one case, Bishu, where the reaction comes within this birth itself. Because Swami always says, you don't take care of your parents well, be sure that your children are not going to take care of you well. There's something that we find it happening, you know, within the
yes.
lifespan.
I am reminded here of one important, a very important study which was done apparently in Harvard, very quickly to explain. It is a longitudinal study which is done over 75 years. And it seems they were trying to figure out what are the characteristics which, you know, define successful people. And you will be shocked to know, or you will be surprised to know, that one thing that was absolutely common in all successful people were the kind of relationships that they had with their mothers and
mothers.
Their parents. Yes. So it almost showed that if you had a good relationship with your mother, you were more successful. Even worldly success came back to you. And the beauty of it was, it seems even for those people who did not have a good relationship with their mother while she was alive or she was around, they were able to change by, you know, fulfilling some of her desires after she left. Meaning, even after the person goes, by me having respect, you know, for my mother, or my feeling repentance that, oh, my mother wanted this, etc., they became more successful. I think that's a...
In fact, they correlated the relationship with father in the childhood to life satisfaction levels. They found that those who had a wonderful relationship with their father had excellent life satisfaction levels towards their end of their lives.
Well, so on the whole, what we understand after this modus operandi of law of karma is that actually this is part of our journey towards God. It is neither to be understood as a punishment or a reward, but it is a beautiful journey where the mind, as it goes through this journey, is made to learn lessons, is made to purify itself and go closer to God through various situations, circumstances, individuals. So as you have understood, the first thing we need to do is do not point finger at situations, do not point finger at circumstances or at individuals, but always keep the finger pointed towards yourself, because it is your mind that needed these.
And the learning that comes out of it.
And the learning that comes out of it, which is beautifully orchestrated by the Lord. And as we have seen many a time, because of the time lag, one would not know, but we have also discussed that a clean slate, a clear mind, possibly enhances the probability of we responding in a different way, because that's the whole idea. We need to learn new lessons in different ways. So now we will move on to the last part of our study circle. All said and done, fine, this is okay, we understand to some extent what the law of karma is, but what is now more important is how do we break this cycle? Because we need to go through this cycle, it's for a good, but at some point we must learn how to stop. As Giridhar was saying, there's a workshop where more future arrows are getting prepared, which is the Agami karma. So how do we prevent at least the future reactions from coming to us? So let's spend some time on understanding how to transcend this, though we cannot break the law of karma, but how to transcend the law of karma.
I think one we discussed just now is serving the parents. I think that is one important facet. And then Swami mentions about so many other ways. Two things come to my mind. One is non-repeating repentance that Swami always says. And even if you have committed a mistake, if you repent wholeheartedly, sincerely, and never commit that mistake again, then you have the opportunity to win Lord's grace and prayers.
And what does the grace do?
What does the grace do? The grace helps you to go through the vicissitudes of life, through the pains and trials and tribulations of life, but without going through the pain of those circumstances. It's just like Bhagwan says that when someone is on the operation table, how the doctor comes and gives an anesthesia and the operation happens and the patient doesn't feel the pain, but he has to go through the operation, but he doesn't feel the pain. I think that's what happens once we take to this path of prayer, once we take to the path of gratitude to the Lord for everything that He has given us. You know, always, just like Mother Kunti, they say Mother Kunti used to always pray to the Lord that give me suffering. And she was so grateful to the Lord that the Lord gave her suffering. I mean, where would you find a person who is grateful to the Lord for giving suffering? But that was her attitude. Because that's the way she felt proximity with the Lord, and that's how she won the grace of the Lord. So I think this concept of gratitude, this concept of prayer, the concept of non-repeating repentance, all these really help us to strengthen, to bolster us, to take on life in a much more cheerful manner.
In fact, there's a saying called, Prayaschittam Papa Vinashanam. Now, prayaschit doesn't mean going around confessing to everybody. No, the confession is actually, it's to your soul. To your soul.
To your conscience.
To your own conscience. So, in fact, when you get into this habit of confessing again and again, weekly once, or once in a year, go and have a holy dip somewhere, and that you use as an excuse, if it becomes a habit, then actually what message you are sending to your own self is that, okay, even if you were to do a mistake, at the end of the day, there is a particular platform where you can get rid of it.
No, many people feel go to the temple and you break some coconuts and you're redeemed of your actions.
But it is actually, it's a false sort of belief, it's a lie to yourself.
It's trying to wash your guilt.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We have to face ourselves, and the prayaschittam is for your own soul. It's not for, because somebody will feel bad or some outside factor is there. It's for your own soul that you should be repenting. So repenting again, what I mean to say, there's no use. The most unproductive way of living is to live in guilt or in sorrow. In fact, Krishna straight away banishes Arjuna when he starts going into that mode of depression. Though there was no guilt in that. But Krishna says very, very clearly in Bhagavad Gita is the most unproductive way of living is to live in sorrow and live in past. Why it happened to why?
Keeping
why
on cribbing.
Okay. What if there are some questions which are wrong questions, like why it happened to me? Some questions are absolutely unproductive and dangerous, and they're like questions which don't have an answer, and many people have gone into that loop of asking themselves. Instead of that, as we have been discussing, how to take life is to be positive, accept that whatever has happened with a positive go forward, and yes, it is meant for a learning lesson, and yes, we have, the best thing they say is, when you take a promise that I will not commit sin, is to stop sinning at that moment. The mistake that you do, the greatest thing that you can, that can ever have to an individual is to learn the lesson from the mistake and not repeat it. So doing mistake is not bad, but to repeat a mistake is wrong.
In fact, you know, sometimes when you are in a mistake mode, you don't feel your conscience. At that point of time, I had a very interesting experience recently. I have this photograph of Bhagwan really staring at you on my phone. And recently I had this experience. When you are in this mistake mode, you really cannot look into the eyes of Bhagwan. I mean, sometimes you won't be able to hear your voice, or you won't be able to identify with your conscience. You will avoid it conveniently. But when you have a photograph of Bhagwan with you, maybe on your phone or in your room or something, where he's really looking at you, you know, and if you are not able to look into his eyes, means there is something wrong, right? So immediately I started asking, what is it that I'm doing that is not allowing me to pleasantly look into Swami's eyes? So then I started making those changes. So probably in a simple practical way, if we have a photograph of Bhagwan which is looking into us, and if we are able to look back into Swami's eyes with lots of love and good feeling, which means we are doing the right thing. You know, this kind of a small little thing could help. Anyway, but Swami says that good actions, performing good actions or good karmas is absolutely important. He also makes it very clear that technically a good action or good karma cannot negate a bad action or bad karma. You cannot say that, oh, I have done one bad karma, so I will do two good karmas, so 2 minus 1 is 1 good karma. It doesn't happen that way. So Swami gives this insight and says that unless you accumulate enough good karmas, you will not develop vairagya or detachment from the world. In fact, most of the mistakes or our reactions happen because of our love for our world, expectations from the world, which are not fulfilled. But Swami says to develop that kind of a detachment from the world, which is some kind of a root cause of our reactive nature, our desires, can only happen if we engage ourselves in enough good karma and have accumulated enough spiritual bank balance.
It's true, what you say is true, that no doubt when you talk of actions, good actions are definitely more desirable than bad actions. But the point here, Bhagwan, at some point he takes us a step further and he says that even good actions have their own good reactions. So if you talk of the highest goal of life, of where you say you would not like to have a future birth and you know you would really like to realize the goal of life, good also binds. So Bhagwan gives the example of the iron chain and the copper chain and the gold chain, and he says good that you do, the sattva that you do, is like a gold chain. It's glittering, it's beautiful, but still it also binds. And therefore basically at this point what we really need to remember is the way to transcend this, as Ganesh was mentioning, is initially it may start with this very disturbing question of why is this happening to me, why is this happening to me. But at some point I think we need to start asking why should it not happen to me. Because once you understand the law of karma, you know that there are a lot of things you've done in the past, so I am no angel dropped from heaven. So I have my own past, so that is the reason why it's happening to me. And as time passes, possibly we wouldn't even ask why not me. We would start asking the more fundamental question, why? And that's where I think this whole idea of the law of karma sinks into us, and then no questions remain. We learn to accept life, and that possibly is what Bhagwan always talks of, surrender, wherein you surrender the outcomes. Yes, yes, actions are in our hand, but you surrender all outcomes, you accept things as they are, and cheerfully go through life. I think that's one way, be cheerful, come what may, as Bhagwan said, everything is for my good. Yes. That possibly is one way of taking the law of karma and reaction, reflection, yes, resound in a very positive way.
You surrender not only the fruits of action, but you surrender even the doership.
Going ahead from what you said, the way I'm understanding it is, first you understand that you don't do bad actions, do good actions. Because more number of good actions you do, they bury the effect of the evil effects of the bad action, like an anesthesia insurance. Eventually, even good actions also are all binding, which is also going to get me back into this world. So we have to even stop doing the good action. Meaning, so what could be the good actions? Bhagwan says, has given us several, seva, namasmarana, japa, dhyana, yajnam, etc., etc. So from many, you finally come to one, right? That is, from many actions, you come to one action. You either do namasmarana, you know, offering everything. And then Swami says, transcend even that from one to none. From many to one and from one to
the
none.
The nothingness that you talked about.
The nothingness, yeah. Probably that is what that yogi...
I think possibly the best way to understand that is because people may get confused, you know, when we say give it up, give up even good action. Does it mean I stop doing service, I stop, you know, respecting bhajans, people, I stop singing bhajan? But I guess what Swami really means is to give up the sense of doership.
Exactly.
Because if you clearly understand, it is the mind-body complex which really combines thought and action together, goes out as a deed, which is now attracting a reaction. So it's the mind-body which does, and it's the mind-body which also faces the consequences. The problem is because I associate myself with the mind and body, so I also feel I am doing it, and therefore logically I also experience the bitterness or the pleasant feeling of the consequences.
So you mean here I as in Amey Deshpande or as Ganesh, or you mean that I?
No, I'm talking about the higher self, the inner self within us, which Bhagwan always says is the Atman, associates itself with the mind and the body, and therefore feels it is doing the act. And since it feels it is doing the act, it also has to bear the consequences. So Bhagwan says there is no end to the cycle of action-reaction. The body will continue. One day when the body goes, the mind will continue. So eternally, the action-reaction cycle will go on and on and on. There is no end to it. Even when you go to your next birth, the mind remains, though there may be a discontinuity in the body. So finally, the only way that one can break the cycle of law of karma is to disassociate oneself from mind and body. That is what Bhagwan means, give up the sense of doership. So once you feel it is God who is doing through me, then definitely you do not even face the consequences. So that is one way to break this cycle of law of karma.
I am reminded of a very funny incident in this context. Once one person was sitting on a boathouse and he was fishing, enjoying his vacation. And suddenly one more boat comes and hits that boathouse from behind. And this man was furious because at that point only he had just caught a fish. And then one more boat comes and hits and he looks behind with full anger. Who is this person? And he sees that that boat is empty. Nobody's sitting in that boat. Okay. So in next moment, an empty boat came and hit his boat. So he was expecting somebody sitting in that boat towards whom he wanted to direct his anger. But when he looks at that boat and nobody's sitting, the anger just vanished. Okay. So here.
And it gave way to probably peals of laughter.
Peals of laughter. Exactly. Similarly, in our life also, if we emphasize more on doership, that I am the person, that the most of the problems in the world, most of the politics is because of ego clash. It's basically, they say politics is where the human mind exists and all this ego problem is there. So, and if the ego in fact is the greatest barrier for us between our true self, means if you want to say that we want to be closer to God, the ego, our own ego is the greatest.
Ego here, as Bhagwan says, is not mere pride, but it is attachment to the body. False identification.
With your identity, with your body and mind and intellect. All this come together.
So what you're probably saying is, if you can remove the target, meaning because there was nobody riding the boat, the anger didn't go at all.
It had no place to go.
So remove the target itself.
Target in the sense, as sir
mentioned, sense of doership.
Yeah. Doership.
When there is somebody saying, I am doing, the consequence also comes to that.
Karma
when
also comes leave, back to karma, that.
And we often say, Swami, please make us your instrument. So when we say, Swami, we are your instrument, the person who's using the instrument is more important. That is Bhagwan. You should not go around saying that instrument is more important. That's where the ego comes.
I'm reminded of a very beautiful document, or I should say scripture. Something like, Upadeshasar, it's called. In which it's a conversation between Lord Shiva and a set of, what you can say, action-oriented Brahmins who really believed that God, his job is only to give us the fruits of our action and our job is to keep doing action, and his job is to keep giving us. And so, Lord Shiva wanted to help them break out of this cycle. So he wants to first prove to them that action is not the supreme. And so very logically he explains to them that, see, fundamentally understand that action itself, it cannot be supreme, because for anything to be supreme, it has to be independent. If it is going to depend on something else, it cannot be the supreme. Action depends upon three fundamental things. It depends on the doer, it depends on the instrument, and it depends on the desire of doing, right? For example, I want to play harmonium. I am the doer. I need a harmonium, which is the instrument. And then only the harmonium and me being there is no use. I should also have the desire to do. Only then the action or of performing the, harmonium playing occurs. So how can we then transcend beyond the action? One is remove the instrument. Okay. Find out where is this desire coming from. And finally even transcend that and find out who is the doer. Yes. Is the body the doer? Is the mind the doer? Or is there some, doer which exists beyond? That is the supreme. Action, finally, after all our discussion, guess what? Action is not the supreme. There is a doer which is more supreme than even action itself.
Correct. In fact, just to summarize all that we have been discussing up until now, as to how to transcend this law of karma, or what is the solution to this whole law of karma. There are four ways in which we can deal with the law of karma, as Swami says. The first way is the most dumb way, which is to go through it. You have
that
to face your karma.
We have no choice in any case.
You have a choice. So you just go through it. But the greatest problem there is, if you are not sure what you should be doing, you might be accumulating tremendous amount of karma,
yes.
Both good and bad. So that is not the way ahead, definitely. The second way is a slightly better way, where you accumulate, as already mentioned, enough good karma such that if you consider your own bad karmas performed in the past as seeds, you accumulate so much of good karma, like layers of soil on top of that single seed, such that there is no water, there is no air, there is no nourishment to that seed, and the seed will never germinate.
Yes.
But the issue with this kind of process is, one, of course, you have to face the consequences of your good karmas as well. That is, you have to experience the good fruits of your good karma. So you have to take births for that. And the second thing is, suppose you stop at some point of time in performing these good karmas, you will start exhausting the fruits of the good karmas, and there is a possibility that the seeds which are still alive inside can sprout again. So it's not a foolproof method. But the last two ways to deal with karma are really the most wonderful ways. The third way is to remove the target, as discussed just now. If we remove the target, like we discussed, that prarabdha karma are like those arrows which are just left by us. And those arrows are coming back to hit us because we feel we are the doer, so we are the target for those karmas. But if we start developing the feeling that I am not this body, I am not this mind, but I am the self that I truly am, this doership is lost eventually. And with the doership, the target of these karmic arrows are also lost. With the target vanishing, even the arrows of karmas vanish.
Like how I think Buddha said that unless I decide to accept your gift, okay, the gift.
This is when the person abuses Buddha, he doesn't accept that.
Correct.
So he says it anyhow, it's left with you only, so you take it back as you
take it back.
Exactly. The
arrows don't have any target to hit because I don't exist.
And the last way is the most beautiful way. Swami says, by the grace of God, all your accumulated karma, that is Sanchita karma, your Prarabdha karma, everything can be taken care of. You know, God has in His power, in His will to wipe out all our Sanchita karma.
That's a saving grace for us.
Accumulated karma. So, Swami says, do what is required to earn the grace of God.
Wow.
That is the most beautiful way to tackle karma.
I think what comes to my mind is how Bhagwan used to mention that God's grace is like a matchstick.
Just burn.
Yeah, a matchstick can in an instant burn a bale of cotton. It can happen.
By a whole forest.
Whole forest, case. Exactly. I mean, we can burn away tons of karma, janmas of karma, just by winning the grace of God. And even as we were discussing this, how when you win the grace of God, you can go through life, even though you're going through rough times, but you will never feel the pain. You know, I was just reminded of my own experience. For more than 1.5 years, I was in the hospital undergoing, recovering from a very chronic illness. And today when I reflect on that, you know, I actually do not have any really very sad memories of that episode of my life. Because during that entire period, Bhagwan made sure that He was with me every time. You know, actually, to really share with you, it was one of the very blissful periods for us in the family, because every day Swami would go and speak either to my father or to my brother or to my mother or to me. Every day, you know, one member of the family got some blessing or the other. So it was like...
In fact, the tough times with Swami have always been the best times.
Yes, they are the best times. I mean, that is a practical example.
In fact, I remember Professor Rav narrating his accident incident in the college. And during the course, he said, Swami took care of them so much that Mrs. Rao was almost wondering that maybe every month they should have an accident so that Swami spends so much time with them, you know. That is the grace and love of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned about giving up that sense of doership. And a very beautiful quote of Bhagwan I happen to read. Swami says, work done in the cognition of the Atma, you know, where you think you are the Atma. That gives protection to life, that broadens the heart, that illumines the individual, that annihilates the ego, and that confers bliss. And Swami says, to recognize the sanctity of karma, we have to first purify our hearts. And how can we purify our hearts? Only by developing pure love.
Well, so I think that's very nice ways we have discussed of transcending the law. So possibly there are two mantras which we have to keep to ourselves. The first one being cut the cycle. By hook or by crook, you know, quote unquote. That somehow we need to cut the cycle. One way, as we said, is to obviously give up the sense of doership, which may be a very profound thing and a very tough thing at a gross level. But the other way one could really cut the cycle is possibly at every situation, try not to continue the cycle of, you know, a brick for a brick or a stone for a stone. So here is somebody who hurts you and then you hurt them again and they hurt you again. So if at some point at least one of them are matured enough to say, let's end this and let's have a new beginning. In fact, this is where I recall Draupadi's example. We all know that when finally Draupadi's children were slaughtered and the Pandavas wanted to take revenge and kill the murderer, finally Draupadi is the one who stops them. And she says, don't do this, because if you were to do this, the mother of that son also is going to suffer the same way I have suffered. She had the great maturity to understand what that pain means, and therefore she actually put an end to it. In fact, recently we have heard even of Malala, the girl from Pakistan who was attacked by the Talibans. And I was very surprised to hear that when she spoke in the UN assembly, she said something to the same effect. She said that, I do not even hate the Talibs who shot me. She says, I quote, "Even if there is a gun in my hand and he stands in front of me, I would not shoot him. This is the compassion that I have learned from Muhammad, the Prophet of Mercy, Jesus Christ and Lord Buddha." So this really goes to show that if we have that maturity of mind, we can put an end and we can cut the cycle in this way. That is one point. So we need to cut the cycle. And obviously, as we have discussed, the other way to cut the cycle is to earn the grace of Lord. Because with His grace, as He said, anything can be vanquished. And the other mantra is to soften the blow. See, now that we know that there's a law of karma operating in this creation, and we find all of us are going through our own tough times and difficult times, I think it's knowing the law of karma is not to go and quote this to others saying that you're going through this because of law of karma, so all the best, please go through it, you know, in the best possible way. But what Swami expects us is, can we soften the blow? Can we add those sweet words, good words, and loving actions, and, you know, our feelings for them, which can actually, as we just discussed now, how Swami did it for us during our tough times. That is the model He has set.
Not judge people, but love people.
Not judge people, but love people. And anyhow, the law of karma is making them go through a struggle. Why? We need to add to it. We don't need to become a part of that. But let's become a part of the solution. So I think the two mantras we need to carry away from this is, one is cut the cycle, and the other one is soften the blow, and ultimately win His grace. I think we'll end with listening to Bhagwan Himself summing up all that we have discussed in a beautiful discourse. We'll have an excerpt from this discourse, and with that we'll conclude our discussion this time.
Adichetu, adichetu, inkinniyo chetu, anuchuhalu alli alasipoku. Don't imagine that you will be able to do that, that you will be able to achieve that. Don't imagine like that. Don't get tired.
Devittulanu naati, ichota nuntiro, aaphalamula meeku anduchundu.
You are here because of the fact that you have sown the seeds in the past, and you will reap the fruits according to the seeds that you have sown.
Vittanam okataina, veraina phalamulu.
Is it possible to reap another fruit while the seed sown was altogether different? Whatever you may do, everything will be counted one after another. Without dropping either good or bad. God will send you to this world with a heavy necklace.
Karmalanyu chechina kantamala.
It's the one of the necklace with all the beads of our past actions.
Idi anubhavinchavaddu ani bhagavantude matramu shasinchadu.
God never commands you do this and you don't do that.
Kani aa ninnayanni neeke appajettadu.
The decision is left to you.
Edi manchi edi chedda.
You have to decide what is good and what is not.
Om Shanti 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 Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
So that was the second and final part of the Radio Sai Study Circle on Reaction, Reflection, Resound. You had the Controller of Examinations, Mr. G.S. Srirangarajan, who was moderating the session, and the other brothers participating in this discussion were Amey Deshpande, Sai Girdhar and Ganesh. And they ended on the note that we have to cut those ties. We know how to do it. We have to do it.
And if we don't do it, situations will keep coming in our lives to ensure whether we have learned the lesson or not. And if we don't learn the lesson the easy way, we will have to learn it the hard way. I'm reminded of the Deepavali discourse in 1998, where Swami said, the difference between Rama and Ravana. Ravana, Swami explained, was a master of 64 forms of knowledge. But Swami said, finally, he eliminated himself in spite of being such a scholar and knowing so many forms of knowledge. Why? Swami said, because he knew everything, but he did not put anything into practice. And ultimately, his desires made him sick. His desires finally killed him. On the other hand, Rama too was a master of 64 forms of knowledge, but not only did he know them, but he also practiced them. And Swami said, this is the difference between Rama and Ravana. This is the difference between goodness and greatness. Swami said, it's more important to be good than be great. And I think as Deepavali approaches, this is the message that we have to take into all of our lives. The light, we have to light in our hearts, is this light of his teachings and practicing his teachings and ensuring that this light of practicing his teachings burns bright in our beings. And it reduces to ash everything in our bodies and minds that is unsacred, that is unholy, and that is unwanted. Let this fire of Deepavali, let this fire purify, let this lamp of love nullify all that is not proper within us. Let it purify our hearts and minds and light the fire which always goes up and high. Let us always march up and high in our journey to attain the divine. Every time we look at the fire, every time we look at the camphor, every time we do aarti, let us remember to pour into that fire all that is not auspicious in our beings and determined to rise up always like the flame. Every day when we do aarti, every day when we light a lamp, and now as we celebrate Deepavali, let us always remember to rise, to purify and rise, till we attain the ultimate. And with these thoughts, dear listeners, it's time to wind up this session of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Let us ruminate him, let us ruminate his form, let us ruminate on his teachings deep inside our hearts and purify our beings. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day on this lovely Thursday, listening to our live programs from the studios. If you have any comments or suggestions, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. And now, as I take leave, this is Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Here is a loving sidearm and sweet goodbye from the studios of Radio Sai. You will continue to listen to instrumental music for some time, and at 10:10 you will listen to a drama by the youth from Kuwait, which they performed here in Sai Kulwant Hall on 12th July 2003 in front of Bhagwan. So that will start at 10:10, but for now you will listen for some time to the instrumental music, and we'll put you back to our regular stream. We'll, as the curtains are drawn on the live broadcast. Thank you so much, and Sai Ram, Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam.